Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Let me get up here on the screen so I can properly say hello and good morning. Got my business visor on again, and thank you for coming a little bit earlier this morning. We're going to talk really quickly about two things. I actually did a post yesterday regarding, again, we're going to be talking about Nancy Guthrie, who was abducted on the 1st. We're on day 33. She was abducted February 1st, although again, mixed messaging about whether the night before sheriff's officers actually reported to her house. That's what the sheriff said. Still can't decide whether that was just untrue and he made a mistake or whether they actually had some sort of notification about something going awry and went out there, but never, of course, discovered anything that happened until the next day, which was Sunday. Nevertheless, I want to talk really quick about two things this morning. We're going to touch on this blood spatter again. So I want to preface this by saying that I am not a blood spatter expert. There are people back in Quantico and in multiple crime labs that's what they do. So they're not general crime scene experts. They're not agents or officers like me who have just seen things like this and can look and make some sort of determination from our experience. They're actually people that study it day in and day out, every second of the day. And that is their area of expertise. That's all they do. So I want to preface this by this. And I also want to say that I know that there's some very well-respected individuals who are crime scene specialists. And there have been differing of opinion. And I was actually really working hard to get some very particular photographs up on stage. Unfortunately, when you leave the FBI, you're not allowed to take anything with you, of course, related to the crimes you've investigated or anything like that. So I can't pull photos from FBI files. Obviously, I don't have those. But what I do have are different files regarding blood spatter evidence. And when you look at this, again, the question is, was she alive? And did she cough up, in other words, spew out blood? And let me tell you why I have issues with that philosophy. And I want to, again, preface this by really the only people that are going to know the absolute answer to this question are blood spatter experts that would take this, analyze it microscopically, and be able to tell you. I was hoping to get these particular pictures up. I might have to do that tomorrow because I can't get them to go through. But nevertheless, it shows a pattern very similar to this when you have droplets drop and those droplets then spread, right? Because it's from a particular height. And as the droplet goes, it splashes and spreads and it becomes this pattern that you're seeing here, I think, just from experience, from having cases where people have bled in a droplet type situation and not spewed out blood. So when you spew out blood, in my experience, it's fine. It's a really fine mist, very fine mist compared to this. And you wouldn't see a big droplet or anything like that, typically speaking. And the other thing is you look at the circumstances. We know Nancy was taken. We know she was abducted. And in every case I've had, other than parental kidnapping cases, there is something put on the mouth, either a gag or tape that's put on the mouth, because the last thing you want you're going to be transporting them in a car is if at that time of night you're pulled over for some reason, or you're at a stop sign or a stoplight and they're screaming at the top of their lungs. They could be heard by a car that's on the side of them. They could be, if you're pulled over, obviously they could be heard if they're in the trunk. So for all these reasons, you gag and or put something over the mouth of the individual. Would that stop the nose? No, not necessarily, but I think it would be rare. The other thing is you have to look at why. Why would they be having this situation occur? It's called actually hemoptysis. Hemoptysis is when you actually spew blood from your mouth, coughing. Now, this happens a lot with individuals that have issues with their airway, you know, where it's actually bleeding in their airway from a variety of health-related issues. The tissue becomes irritated, coughing over and over, and you can spew blood out. And of course, it can be very, very serious. When I was doing my rotations, I had a lot of people that were suffering from COPD and from other related type issues, and they would spew out this blood. And that's a lot of what I'm going by when I talk about having seen this. It comes out in this very misty type pattern. No drops or anything like that. It's very misty. And it typically, of course, is blended also with, as you can imagine, mucus that you would also see in that. That is what the blood spatter experts are going to have to look at. The scientists that we can't do, nobody can do. I can't do it. There's no one that's just looking at these pictures that can certainly make a definitive statement as to whether this is just the spatter from these blood drops that are dropping or whether it's actual spewing of, you know, from the mouth. It just doesn't make sense to me under these circumstances that Nancy would not have been gagged or her mouth otherwise covered to make sure that she doesn't scream out or yell out. That would be the last thing you want. That's why you bind a person you would take and make sure their arms and legs and that they can't kick. That's why I think that in that backpack, it was stuffed full of something to shroud her or contain her. As you can imagine too, if you get pulled over and you have somebody kicking in the trunk or taking their legs and going up and down. Yes, I understand she's an 84-year-old woman, but let's not forget that when your life is on the line, you can find amazing strength to save your own life. So the other thing is this pattern where it occurs at, and I don't have the picture that shows the door, but it literally appears to me that the person is reaching back and is stuck there for a couple seconds while he takes the door, shuts the door, and then at that point, that blood is dropping in the same spots. Now, you might ask, why is this even important? Well, of course, it's going to be important in analyzing, as an example, was Nancy alive or was she not? If she was coughing, that would give us hope that she was alive. If this is just dripping, it doesn't tell us one way or the other. But it just doesn't make sense to me under these circumstances that her mouth wouldn't be covered. And it doesn't make sense to me under these circumstances that she would have necessarily suffered from the blunt force trauma necessary to the chest to cause this sort of bleeding. So the bleeding just wouldn't happen because she coughed. There's no indication that she had COPD. Maybe she did, and we just haven't heard about it. But this coughing would be caused by bleeding in that lung area, bronchial type area there, that would cause bleeding that you would have to spew. So you just wouldn't spew because you're coughing. It would mean that, and this could be, that she suffered severe chest trauma enough to cause the bleeding. Now, we know she was on blood thinners. I have this picture of her on the Today Show with her cane next to Nancy, and you can see her arms are bruised up to down. And that is a typical sign of people on blood thinners. My papa, my daddy who raised me is no longer here. He died a few years ago. But my papa, who's married to my biological mother, he, who's been in my life since I was 27, he takes blood thinners and he has a pacemaker. And his arms are paper thin, like the skin is paper thin. So the lightest of trauma to that arm. I mean, he can just set it down sometimes and he'll bleed minorly. And he's all bruised up to down. And I'm sure many of you have people you know in your family or you're acquainted with, or if you're in the medical industry, you've seen this. Of course, I've seen it many times when I was doing my medical my medic rotations. And it's very common. So could she have just merely been bleeding from her arms or other parts of her body because she's on blood thinners? She has a pacemaker. She has a heart condition. Could that be the situation? It definitely, definitely could be here. It could be that they beat her terribly bad enough to cause internal bleeding and did not gag her mouth and she coughed. It's possible. I just don't think that's as probable. And I like to work with Occam's razor probabilities as opposed to possibilities. And believe me, I have the utmost respect for any expert that is in law enforcement and that has a crime scene background. In fact, I have to say, the crime scene reconstructionist that I hope to have on the show, he has a case that is very similar that we've talked about with an 80-year-old who was abducted. They ended up shooting her in the head. And sadly, it's just a tragic situation. But in that case, because he's testifying as an expert in that case, it's too close related in a lot of ways to this case. So therefore, he can't come on the show, which is fine. But I've been talking to him backstage and we've gone over a lot of this. And of course, he believes it's more of a vertical drop. And that's why I believe she's carried. A lot of people say fireman carry. I just don't think that. I think it was probably like this. Could have been fireman carry. I think more than one person could have carried her. Fireman carrier is off my list. I think it's possible. But nevertheless, the more important point as to how she was carried, whether it was like this, so she was closer to the ground, or whether she was up over the shoulder. Either way, they both can make some sense to me. But in any event, I think these were droplets. But again, I have the utmost respect for my colleagues who have a different opinion. And at the end of the day, I would just say, these are opinions that we draw. For me, it's from my medical experience combined with my work experience. For them, it's their work experience, which is vast in many of these cases. So I have the utmost respect for different analyses of this, but for me, that's what's tracking. All right, enough of that. I want to go on to my belief of what could have happened strictly following Occam's razor. And I talk about Occam's razor all the time because Occam's razor is what all of us in law enforcement use, not only law enforcement, but science and any vocation or situation where you have to find the easiest solution. And typically the easiest or the simplest, I should say, in just quick terms, in simple terms, the simplest solution is usually the solution. When you have to start extrapolating and this has to happen for this to happen, and they would have had to do this and this and this, it doesn't make much sense. So let me go to this and talk really quickly about a few statistics. So a few statistics. When it comes to kidnappings in Pima County, there haven't been any, at least that they have tracked. It's not even an area in their crime statistics. It doesn't exist because that is not what happens in Pima County. I've heard so many people say, oh, there's all these cartel kidnappings. Well, I've searched and they're not there. That's just not accurate information. So then I looked out to Tucson. Again, stranger kidnappings just don't happen, or they happen so very, very rarely. Then I expanded out to Arizona. Same thing. Then I expanded out to the United States. Same thing. I know this from working cases, but it's always good to look at those statistics and see you just can't find them. You can't find them because they don't exist. These are the type of kidnapping cases I had, worked on, was the case agent on, and none of them involved stranger abductions. They involved, the number one was gang slash cartel kidnappings of each other. In other words, they didn't get paid for their drugs. Somebody disrespected them about a drug shipment. Someone otherwise, they got teed off. And so they kidnapped, often tortured, tormented the person that did not pay their drug debt, took drugs, sold them, and didn't pay up. Remember, most of that is always on the front when you're talking about drug trafficking. So there's it's very important that in a certain amount of time you pay for what you purchased. And again, in cartels, they actually, it's much different than that. It's not a business of, hey, we're going to sell to a particular distributor, but rather they have a whole network of people that are in their cartel stream, and they go to those same people, the same mules, the same distributors, the same network. It's much more organized than a lot of what some cases involve, where basically you have a cartel that sells to an individual, and then that in a smaller amount, like a couple pounds of whether it is cocaine or whether it's fentanyl, or whether it's methamphetamine, and then they go to their own distribution networks that aren't in the cartel stream. So there's kind of two different ways it's handled. But at the end of the day, all this dope is coming from cartels. All right, I digressed. What my point is on this is that is the majority of kidnappings that I've seen in my experience, and that in talking to the homicide detectives, and I've got another one set to join us on Monday. I'm so excited to talk to him. That is our experience, especially in working cases in this part of the country, in the South, where you have cartels and you have drugs and that sort of thing. That's what you're going to see. The other cases, and these cases are so sad, it's parental kidnapping cases. Worked so many of them. And you start at the same point because you don't know it's the parent. All of a sudden, Susie is missing. She was walking home from school and gone. Or she was supposed to be at a particular place that didn't show up, at a friend's house or so on. And they're gone. So you start the same way. You start interior with family, with close known associates. That's what you start with. And you work out. The most interesting one I ever had, and I'm going to digress a little bit because I think this is interesting and important. The most interesting one I had was a woman who abducted her daughter, and she used a system. This was one of the hardest cases I've ever had, because typically they just take the child and then they, you know, disappear and you can track them. It's much easier. But in this one, they actually had I'll call it an underground railroad. It wasn't exactly like the underground railroad that existed in the days of slavery, but similar, where you have people who are sympathetic to mothers who have said they are abducting their child because the father has been sexually abusing them. And so the mother is trying to extract them from that horrible situation. They have found no relief in the court system. It can't be proven, and they're frustrated and they can't stand the abuse they see. And they abduct the child, and there's people that assist with providing homes and providing money and providing vehicle. They provided everything in this case. It was so amazing that these networks exist. That was my most interesting case. And it was terrible because, of course, she committed a crime in abducting her child and taking her across state lines and everything else that was involved. So unfortunately, she had to suffer the consequences. And I remember in that case, I really believed it was very possible she was telling the truth and believed her daughter was being sexually abused. But nevertheless, that had to be sorted out by the court system and by family services. But that case really tugged at my heartstrings, and it was hard to, you got to get past that feeling and go with the law and do what you're sworn to do. I say all this to tell you that a stranger kidnapping is so rare, everyone. And so I understand, broken glasses, 6 minutes left. We're going to end at about 8 today. I understand why people continue to say it's Savannah, continue to say it's Savannah's husband, continue to say it's Annie, continue to say it's Tommaso. They just cannot let go of it. They can't let go of it. It doesn't matter what the sheriff's office said. I think if the Bureau came out and said it, they might have a different opinion. But right now, they are 1,000% committed to this day that it was somebody that was one of these family members. I 100% concur that this is likely somebody who had some insider information that was provided. I'm going to give you, and I cannot go over today, I'm going to give you another quick example. Please look this up. Vaquero, it's a subdivision in Westlake, in the unincorporated, I think they call it, or incorporated Westlake, town of Westlake. It's called the town of Westlake. I used to live there. And in the town of Westlake, it has the light pollution ordinance. It's very strict. You can read about it. That is in, you know, no light. In any event, there was a string of these robberies that were occurring at very high dollar homes. And it, anyway, long story short, it all stemmed from a maid that was doing service at all of these different multi-million dollar estates. And she had passed along information to just people she knew in her family, and that's how they would end up targeting. So yes, she was culpable and complicit with sort of providing, listen, they're always gone in this time, or you can go in the back door. So she didn't exact, she helped them with information. Do I think it could be something similar to that? It's possible. Or somebody close to Nancy or close to Savannah or Annie or Tommaso that is intimately knows the routines in this house and so forth. I really maintain that, that it could be even a more distant, I don't know if it would be a family member, but somebody more distant, but in their circle distantly. But at the end of the day, I'm going to go quickly to the Occam's razor. Individuals were hired to abduct Nancy Guthrie. In the midst, and it was going to be for ransom, in the midst of this abduction, she died. And these people who would not be cartel people, but would be what I call, they're just bad guys on the that do bad things. In other words, they rob, steal, otherwise harm people for money. And they'll do it. They get word of this. And they, in other words, of Nancy and the relationship to Savannah. And then they get some inside information about her. They do a site survey, you know, which source reporting says was on a different day, backed up by the darkness of night and by the different colors of shoes or different kinds of shoe. And they attempt this kidnapping. And they do a good job with everything, except considering the fact, apparently, that she could likely die, and she dies. And Now they just go into abort mode. Abort, abort, abort. We cannot get caught. They bury or otherwise sadly dispose of Nancy. I hate talking like this. And they abort. And you might say, well, Jen, because I still believe there's more than one person involved, Jen, how can two people keep a secret? Even Mark Twain said two people can keep a secret if one's dead. But I am telling you, amongst bad guys, amongst bangers, amongst people who commit crimes like this, they know they're on the line. And secondarily, they keep secrets. It's crazy. They do much better than all of us. They keep secrets and they do it well. Typically, the only way something like this breaks is if the girlfriend of porch guy, you know, she finds out he's cheating. And then all of a sudden, you get all this information that comes in. So I'm just saying, I think the underworld type people that committed this crime, no, sophisticated. They were sophisticated enough to thwart the FBI and all these other law enforcement assets finding them. It seems like they were sophisticated enough not to use cellular phones. It seems to me they use two-way radios. That's what I believe at this point from what I can see. And the fact that we don't have, it seems, geofencing helping law enforcement, or we would be, or they would be much more focused much quicker. Remember, they were on high speed. This was blitzkrieg from a law enforcement standpoint. We have a life we need to save. So they weren't doing things slowly. They were putting all their assets into this and jumping in full force. And yet we still have no one. So initially, I was one of them saying, I mean, he pulled weeds, you know, to cover or do something, which I still haven't figured out exactly what all that was. He had the holster. The holster didn't fit the gun. He looks like just a moron. He's sort of, you know, traipsing around, unconcerned about anything. I, to this day, believe there was an accomplice that was in the back. They got in through the back. I believe that because the locksmith that was hired. I believe that because she lived 50 years and maybe left that door open or didn't deadbolt it. It's very easy to get the other kind of lock, get in, go through that garage, get her, abduct her, then decide to take her out through the front so they don't have to go around the entirety of the house. We see the blood patterns and we know that's how she went. She got in a car. There's no way that they just walked around the neighborhood with her. She got in a vehicle and that they were covered by the cover of darkness in this light pollution neighborhood. She dies. They're abandoned and abort their ransom demand that they had hoped to make. And they just clean their hands of it. That's my Occam's razor. I've already discussed my non-Occam's razor theory. That's my Occam's razor, that the simplest is usually correct. Anyway, I'm going to let you guys go. I know I've gone on, oh, a little over a half an hour. Friday, we have Greg McCrary, partner of John Douglas, one of the first two profilers ever in the FBI. He is amazing. He's been a mentor of mine for many years. And we're so blessed to have him. We've got him for a half an hour, so I'm going to really respect his time. And then on Monday, we have one of my favorites. He's joined us at least once before, Dale Lundberg, a homicide detective in Dallas. He is so interesting to talk to about these cases. He's still in law enforcement, but retired after years of being a robbery detective and 10 plus years as a homicide detective. That's how we met. We were working a homicide case together, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful asset to the show. You'll love him if you haven't watched him in the past. All right, everybody, I'm going to run. Thank you all for being here. I know we started earlier this morning. Until next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all missing.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.